This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Tom, Rich, Brandy and Serena getting a little bit overexcited on a Thursday morning, November the 19th. What have we been looking at? Well, we've been looking at the best things to do with your money. We've been speaking to the CEO of Mashreq Bank about liquidity, about getting more money into the accounts and pockets of small businesses and individuals. We've been speaking to Mario Volpi, property expert, about how to renegotiate your rental contract to take advantage of even lower prices. We've also been looking at one of the big news stories overnight. That is the Federal Aviation Authority in the US signing off the Boeing 737 MAX to go back into the air. What does it mean for us here? Plus, Serena Kelly has all of your COVID news.
Ask Serena.
With Frago Man, dedicated exclusively to immigration services worldwide.
So we're looking at the latest figures when it comes to COVID-19 in the UAE. Over the last few days, we've had reports of 1,209 new cases, 1,255. Yesterday, it was 1,292 new cases of COVID-19 in the Emirates. So that's after more than 116,000 tests were conducted across the UAE. And just to say, when it comes to tests, more than 15.2 million tests have been conducted across the country. So out of the 154,101 total confirmed or reported cases in the UAE, that includes your recoveries. We had 890 people recover yesterday, so we're at 145,537. Four fatalities yesterday, so we're at 542 deaths total. And active cases have gone up to 8,022.
Right. Where are we with the UAE's health sector? Because I know there's been quite a bit of discussion.
Yep. Federal and local authorities have been discussing the future of the UAE's healthcare sector. So a meeting was held under the directives of His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Vice President and Prime Minister of the UAE and ruler of Dubai, to ensure government integration towards a development plan for the next 50 years, which the public will be able to get involved in as well, because a digital platform is set to be launched to gather ideas from the general public. So during this meeting, delegates identified several key objectives: developing a preventative system that considers the development of diseases and pandemics, achieving leadership in the healthcare sector, and developing a smart treatment system. So officials discussed creating an advanced healthcare system based on providing smart medical services. A lot of talk on using AI with emphasis on 24/7 preventative healthcare and smart services without human intervention. So representatives also discussed ways of consolidating integration, cooperation between federal and local health authorities. So basically trying to get everybody in the same place when it comes to information and sharing information.
Right. Where are we, speaking of information, with the vaccine? Because we've had more news out from Pfizer, haven't we?
Yes.
A vaccine, because of course we are testing and trialling one here in the UAE. Richard Dean is living, walking proof of that. Other vaccines are available.
Yes. There's actually hundreds of vaccines in development around the world, about a dozen in the final stages of testing. Phase three is what we're calling that. Researchers are testing 54 vaccines in clinical trials on humans. At least 87 preclinical vaccines are under investigation. That's with animals. But Pfizer and BioNTech, they've released more details about their coronavirus vaccine. So it now appears to be 95% effective. So 5 points higher than previously thought, which we were announcing earlier on in the week. And now they're saying that they will be, it's going forward for authorization within days. So they've also revealed it does work well in older people. So apparently it's 94% effective in those over the age of 65 who are among the most at high risk when it comes to COVID-19. So correspondent Thomas Moore says that is significant.
Many scientists had feared that a vaccine wouldn't work so well in older people because their immune systems don't respond so well. So that is a key tick in the wish list for a vaccine that could end this pandemic.
So they found no serious safety concerns, a few headaches, bit of fatigue, but that's kind of, it's not unusual when you are getting a vaccine. It's met safety criteria and will be submitted to US regulators for approval within days.
Before we move on to the Dubai Fitness Challenge with Serena, do you have any questions, Tom?
Yes. my question is, where is it? It's here. So you know, I played the Scrooge character in our end of year panto just in the first hour of the show by telling people that they couldn't have Christmas with friends, just on the back of that Encima, and just reiterated the fact that we are trying to get hold of Encima, trying to get you more and more details on this one, because I know a lot of people have got plans afoot at the moment. Somebody then texted this in, and I've got an answer, but rather than steal the thunder, I'm going to hand it over to our Serena. So people with family in Dubai can meet up, but people without have to celebrate alone this festive period.
In the sense of meet up outdoors or in a venue? Or?
So the premise being that you can't have friends around. Look, if you're having a Thanksgiving dinner, if you're having a Christmas dinner, if you're having a National Day dinner, whatever it is, you can't have friends round to yours, or you can't organise something out and about, if you like, in a private area. But you can have family round to your house. Absolutely no problem at all. So they're saying, oh, yeah, but we haven't got family here. Does that mean we can be alone? No, because you can still organise an event with your friends, but it has to be out at a public venue.
Yeah, like, so if you, you know, restaurants, people can still meet there. You know, it's the main thing is, like, trying to keep with, you know, within your bubble with the people that you're seeing on a regular basis. So, you know, trying to keep that safety bubble. But, yes, you could go to a restaurant, have National Day celebrations or Christmas Day celebrations in a restaurant with another family that you're keeping that bubble with. But in regards to inviting that family round to your house, that would not be advisable right now.
Yeah, that certainly seems to be the way I'm reading. And we've talked about the grey areas. We've talked about the sort of the fact that there is a little it's not the clearest of mandates at the moment.
You did have, I mean, we're dating back now to when you were given permission saying the only people allowed round to your home would be immediate family members. So like first degree relatives. In that regard, it was like no more than five people. I think it did go up to 10, but I don't want to actually confirm that because the original figure was always five. But obviously with the latest updates, you're trying to find out from authorities to make sure, okay, is that still allowed to have immediate family? Because it wasn't mentioned in the guidelines. So you can't just make the assumption that, okay, I can still have my family round, but I can't have my friends.
Yeah.
So an official, a UAE government official, needs to actually just clarify, are you still allowed to have family, or as in it really should not be any private gatherings at all in your home, and you should just be out in a safe environment that's monitored, inspected and constantly disinfected?
Yeah, so certainly a number of the readings of what we've been told so far is that non-member members round to your house for a celebration, not good. Immediate family round to your house is okay as per the rules, because it's basically going back to the original rules that were put in place.
Yeah, but again, with the guidelines.
Hang on, we're meant to be singing from the same song sheet on this one.
Yeah, but we're not. It's just,
you're just lit fire to my song sheet whilst I've been singing it.
Because with the update of the guidelines, they're talking about workplaces, celebrations and no private gatherings. They don't refer to family members. So we want confirmation on that. So before you go start inviting family round to your house, and I know Tom's glaring at me now, before you start inviting people round to your home, just be safe and think about the greater good of the consequences, where it could be a 10,000 dirham fine or 5,000 dirham for anybody. But that's, I'm talking about a gathering now, like, you know. So
this is not an intervention. This is not an attempted coup or anything like that. I would ask Serena. Pedestal is covered in ivy at this time of year. All I'm saying is that the rules have not changed. So the rules as was and as is that first degree family are welcomed round to your house.
That was always the case, yes.
So that hasn't changed. So that's okay for Christmas.
Yeah, they haven't actually come out and updated that. That was always the case. And then
still is the case, no problem at all. But there is a reiteration that you can't have people that ain't blood relatives.
Just don't have a private gathering at home. That's
why didn't you say that in the first place?
Can I go home now?
Poor Serena, you don't get paid enough for this.
I don't.
Right.
Now, Dubai Fitness Challenge 30 by 30 is going on. How is your steps going, by the way, guys?
Oh, hello, Fitbit is on. Yeah. Where am I this morning? I've already done 3 kilometres. Thank you very much. 49 beats per minute on the old heart rate monitor.
Richard? oh, wait. Oh, no. Weren't you trying to... Didn't you join Dubai 92's team?
Exactly.
Because he's the Trojan horse.
Yes.
Because my leg's wonky.
Right.
Exactly. I've registered for them. I go backwards. I have negative steps, I think.
Tom, are you actually...
How dare you? Just because I asked a tough question earlier on.
Sorry.
Verily.
I know, rude.
I tried, actually. It was funny, last night I tried. I tried to play tennis with my phone and it didn't work. It's easier to use a racket. I'm here all day. Dad jokes. No, I can't wear those things. I can't wear those watches and things like that. I don't like things on me. So I tried to factor in the phone, just carrying the phone. Didn't work. So that's the problem. I can't run with my phone. I can't play tennis on my phone. Can't swim with the phone. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, right. You should have joined it by 92's team as well then.
Thanks very much indeed.
I can't believe that he goes head to head with you.
He does, yeah.
I mean, I'm not being funny, but Rich, where's your money?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be the referee on that one.
We should actually get in the ring one time.
What?
just to see.
Sponsorship opportunity.
That is the best offer I have had. In a long, long time.
I actually think you
time.
Would probably knock me out, but anyway.
Serena, where are you going with this? I know it's been a long week. But
I'm very tired.
I am not
I'm very tired these
in the
days.
Market for fighting with colleagues or any women, for that matter.
Wait,
okay?
Is it because I'm a woman?
Oh, wow! Is it because I'm a woman?
Come on! It's like, look at the day and age we're living in.
Right, okay.
We would have one problem with that whatsoever.
Chess. We'll play chess, all right?
Oh, yes, the gambit.
If you had both Serena and Tom going head-to-head in a ring or an octagon, who would do the commentary?
McCarty.
Good point. We know people.
Why can't the two of you do the commentary?
Oh, you don't need us doing sports commentary, Serena. That would be ridiculous.
Rich is like, no.
No. Right. Very quickly.
Yes.
Let's dig into what's happening in the UK, because that will affect a lot of people's travel plans.
Yes. So discussions are, because obviously you've got lockdown currently in place in the UK. December 2nd, they're supposed to be easing back those restrictions. So what they're saying now is that England could face a month-long lockdown in January in exchange for being able to spend time with family over Christmas. So one of the UK government's medical advisors says they're keen to make the festive period as normal as possible. Can understand they're trying to, it's almost like boosting morale among the public, I suppose. But there are reports of proposals for that lockdown for a month in January. Still speculation, but definitely it's been put out there.
All right, Serena Kelly, thank you very much.
More details on the Era News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, let's talk banking now. Delighted to be joined on the line by the CEO of one of Dubai's largest banks. He is Ahmed Abdelal, and he's the CEO of Mashreq Bank. Ahmed Abdelal, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Richard.
We've got so much to talk about at the moment, but we're going to start with the news this week that the Central Bank of the UAE has extended its economic stimulus program, known as the TESS scheme. It's essentially a way for the central bank to give money to banks like yours and for you to lend it on to businesses and people across the UAE. Your reaction, first of all, that this scheme has been extended into the summer of next year?
There is much to admire in how the Central Bank of UAE has conducted itself under the governorship of His Excellency Abdelhamid Saeed while responding to the crisis. Let me start by stating that the pandemic has just obliterated demand for products and services, as we have all seen. But it has also threatened the ability of virtually all corporates to access much-needed credit lines, where we have seen even corporates that somewhat was insulated from the effects of the mass lockdown and social distancing, suffering on the liquidity front. So in my mind, the central bank moved to shore up liquidity in the market through the TESS program, and extending the same beyond 2020 is a prudent move that will help alleviate financial stress and at the same time smooth flow of credit and helping banks like us providing the much needed support to individuals and businesses. Also, it will definitely help accelerating recovery as we ease into 2021.
So let's talk about who's going to get the money in 2021. I get that over the past 9 months, you and the other banks here have been making sure it's got to businesses, large and small, and to some extent individuals. Who's going to benefit mostly, Ahmed, as we head into 2021?
Say most of the clients that were impacted by the pandemic. So just let me put it in context. We have extended measures that aim basically at increasing flexibility and providing clients who have been impacted by the pandemic. And these included restructuring payment terms, interest rates and processing fees reductions and waivers, offering payment holidays and extension of loan repayments. Just to put it in context, we have extended the relief for corporates within the test program to the tune of 2.2 billion dirhams and outside of the test program to the tune of 1.4 billion, totaling 3.6 billion. And for retail clients, we have extended the relief within the test program to the tune of 500 million and outside the test program to the tune of 4.6 billion, totaling 5 billion, benefiting 35,000 clients. I can assure you other banks are doing the very same thing. So this will help most of corporates continue sustaining their businesses. And most importantly, as I've mentioned earlier, accelerate the pace of recovery.
Well, let's talk about some of the other things that you've been doing over the past 9 months or so. And accelerating your digital transformation strategy was one of them, partly in terms of customer facing. We know for several years Mashreq has had a strategy of closing some branches and moving towards online or app-based banking. But you say that that has accelerated and a related issue has been behind the scenes, how you run as a bank. You say that up to 97% of your staff have been able to work from home at some point during this pandemic. So talk to me about how this has all fit together.
Well, actually, it's as simple as this. Moving digital helped significantly with the cost of the infrastructure and cost efficiencies or operational efficiencies. We can definitely pass to our client through better structured, better costed solutions and products. You know, moving to digital, whether you're using online or app, has significant benefits, not only in terms of financial inclusion in the sense that you are absorbing more clients who are not comfortable going to a typical brick and mortar branch, but mainly targeting the new generation who are more comfortable using an app or an online application. Our staff, as you have mentioned, we were one of the first banks to move to work from anywhere kind of platform, whether it's here in UAE or elsewhere. And when we say 97% of our clients were working remotely, it means that we have been able to deliver the very same service, no drop on client experience, and at the same time be able to support our clients anywhere from anywhere at any given time.
So very quickly, just quickly, if I can jump in on the number of branches, because I read it was March last year, your chairman, Abdelaziz Al Ghurair, and your predecessor as CEO said that Mashreq wanted to close about 50% of its branches in this drive to go digital. Obviously, that was well before COVID. I wonder if you can tell me, Ahmed, how many branches did Mashreq have in the UAE at its peak, and roughly how many do you have now?
We had more than 80 branches, and we are targeting to operate in UAE, hopefully with 8 to 10 branches over the coming few months. While doing that, we will not be losing market share or footprint. We will be substituting that with smart ATMs, basically. So the footprint will remain the same and actually will increase. However, we are reducing the typical brick and mortar branches.
From 80 down to 8, that's quite a shift for a banker like you with 30 years experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, this is the direction of travel. When you look at the fintech, big tech, telcos, they're at capacity to operate an asset-light model. Are helping them being more nimble, agile, and this is the real competition. And if we don't go asset light without losing focus on servicing clients and the client experience, then I think that we will be facing to a different kind of competition. But let me tell you that this has taken some time to get so that we haven't done that over 12 months. this has been in the making for a number of years.
Finally, let me ask you about your position. You joined Mashreq about 3 years ago and you took the top job in October last year. And I'm sure you had your first 100-day strategy and 3-year strategy and 5-year plan. And then COVID hit. How's it been as a relatively new CEO of a large organization, a high-profile organization like Mashreq, over the past 13 months?
I would say it's a baptism by fire. Let me put it this way. So, I mean, you had the COVID, oil prices, global impact. But I would say that I've been able to learn in those 13 months what I was supposed to learn maybe in the next 5 years. But I can tell you that our strategy during the these tough time has been focused on our people, our clients, and also building up for the future.
Ahmed, we're going to have to leave it there. Fascinating discussion. Hope we can speak again soon. Ahmed Abdellal is the CEO of Mashreq Bank, joining us on the line from their headquarters.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Digging into one of our top business stories this morning, Richard Dean. Talk aircraft to me.
737 MAX finally has been cleared for takeoff by the FAA in the United States, which is the main regulator there. The boss is Steve Dixon. He's a pilot. He's flown one of them himself. So he says, I've been up there, I'm in the plane, I know what's going on. This is him speaking to the guys at CNBC. He says the plane is ready, but it will continue to be heavily monitored.
I'm 100% confident. It's the most scrutinized transport airplane in history, and it's ready to go. So less than an hour ago, I rescinded the grounding order that had been put in place in March of last year. We've got, this is not the end of this safety journey. There's a lot of work that the airlines and the FAA and Boeing will have to do in the coming weeks and months, but we are entering a new phase with respect to the 737 MAX.
Says they have introduced new measures for flying the plane. And the journalist asked him, what about pilots who say they are not comfortable with the new procedures? What will you do?
This airplane, the work that we have done with the design changes and the training changes that will be made to the operators and that pilots will be the training that pilots will be undergoing makes it essential. It makes it impossible for the airplanes to have the same kind of accidents that unfortunately killed 346 people in the Ethiopian Airlines and the Lion Air accidents. Those accident scenarios, those conditions can no longer happen. So, you know, the training is was reviewed by an international panel of pilots. They accomplished it over a 10-day period, and we have incorporated all of their recommendations. We have taken public comments and adjudicated all of those comments in the Flight Standardization Board report. And the training is very straightforward. I did it. And for anyone who's an experienced 737 pilot, it will I think it'll be a good program.
That's Steve Dixon of the FAA.
Now, you spoke to Boeing just before this news came out. You got up early yesterday morning, spoke to them about 4:30 in the morning. Did the 737 MAX come up?
It did. I spoke with Darren Hulst, who's senior guy within their commercial aircraft division. And this was him speaking, yes, so 4:30 a.m. UAE time yesterday, so not that long ago.
So from our perspective, again, we're following the leads of the regulatory agencies around the world, from the FAA to EASA and elsewhere. And we're working really closely with them, making sure that we check all the boxes and we manage all the requirements, as well as working very closely with our customers on return to service plans and how training and how all the other aspects of returning the aircraft to service will occur once the ungrounding order is made.
And it has been made.
Yeah, just, 12 hours later?
Yes. I think it was that interview that did it.
Totally. Tipped it over the edge.
Heard the guy in the business breakfast. Yeah, I think we're good to go.
But getting the approval is one thing. But I would argue that you need to get not just the pilot confidence back up, but also customer confidence.
Yeah, and American Airlines have said no customer who doesn't want to fly on the 737 MAX will have to do so. There were a letter yesterday to staff saying it will be free for anyone to change their flight if they find out that Denver to Milwaukee is on a MAX and they don't want to do it. They can change that at no extra charge.
I just further what you were saying there to a certain degree, and I think kudos and all goodwill to Boeing for literally trying to get this one off the ground at the moment. But I just wonder whether it's too far gone. A couple of examples: Volkswagen, $38 billion on its emissions cheating scandal. The BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill 2010, $68 billion. Where am I going with this one? Corporate mistakes. The most expensive corporate blunders ever. Those two are often thrown up as great examples of that. Analysts suggesting the Boeing 737 MAX could far outweigh both of those, with the potential of going of the price of the debacle going even higher than the $68 billion paid out by BP for the Deepwater Horizon. Reasons being exactly what you're saying: direct costs. They've come out already and said, look, it's cost us $20 billion already. The regaining of confidence, the loss of sales, the loss of business that they've done in the interim period of trying to get this thing back up in the air is also going to cost them. That's not been factored in to those numbers as well. So a lot of analysts are looking at this one at the moment and going, watch this space. If it comes out and blows us all away in terms of getting us from A to B and we love it to bits, then great. But it's a costly one.
And it's interesting too. I've been reading some comments this morning from an aviation analyst called Addison Shonland. He's with the Air Insight Group. And he was talking to CNN about whether you or not you needed a massive sort of safety campaign, either from Boeing or from one of the airlines, to come out and convince people that it was safe. And he was saying, well, actually, that could really backfire, because the unintended consequences of going on a massive PR blitz to convince people that it's safe is that you could actually freak this out. People who had forgotten about the crash, people who weren't really watching the news 2 years ago for whatever reason, would then be reminded or re-reminded. And also, you kind of want people to forget what plane they're flying on and just hop on a plane, whereas a massive safety campaign would bring it to your consciousness of, oh, check my ticket, what am I flying on?
Would you, A, would you get on one? And B, if you've got kids, would you put your kids on one and wave them off?
Yeah. On both.
Yeah, no. Brandy?
I would, but other aircraft are available. Yeah, I would. But
I think I would.
But it would be in my mind. I would, but it would be in my mind.
I know what you mean. Of course, Fly Dubai, big customer of them. I think it had 12 when they were grounded and many more on order. The world needs these single-aisled aircraft. Airbuses are the only other significant manufacturer at the moment. The fact is, we are going to be flying on these things.
Yeah.
Over the next 5 to 10 years, we just are.
Is it wrong to say I'd just rather not think about it?
Yes.
Is that wrong?
It's right.
Okay.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
So continuing the theme on today's Property Pulse, and as Brandy was saying, something of a theme developing throughout the course of the morning. How do you get more bang for your buck? How do you see your dirham go that little bit further? What is the fine art of negotiating your contract? We've just heard from Lynette Abad. And when it comes to contracts, when it comes to getting the best out of that contract, well, you really do need to turn to a world-class negotiator, don't you? Or rather, if you talk about it in the lingo from his manner, a proper wheeler dealer. So that's why we're bringing into the mix sales and leasing manager Engel & Völkers right here in Dubai, Mario Volpi. All right, Mario?
Yes, good morning, Tom. Nice introduction, thank you.
Nice to have you with us today. Look, we have been, as you've just been listening into what Lynette was saying there about some of the common mistakes made, the ongoing battle between tenants and landlords alike. I mean, given your wealth of experience in this field, not just here in the UAE, but back in the UK and elsewhere across Europe, what is the fine art of negotiating? What do we get wrong most commonly here?
Well, I think when it comes to negotiating, I guess it depends on whether you're talking about you have an existing landlord or whether you actually have a new landlord. There are differences to both. I mean, with an existing landlord, obviously, it's at least a year has passed, so that person has had a year's worth of experience of you as a tenant. So the relationship element is super important when it comes to, you know, really getting the other person to see your point of view. But I would say definitely do your homework, check online with all the portals, see exactly what is available to you or others, and adjust accordingly. But don't just look at it from your own point of view, as in your own as a tenant. Look at it so that it's a win-win situation. Because if you really are hammering a landlord, they are reluctant then to sort of come down to the levels that you want.
Sending gifts, is that a good idea to your existing landlord?
Well, bribery is always good. I always think meeting the person face-to-face is very good. Obviously, socially distanced, what have you, so that, you know, they can see the whites of your eyes and vice versa. I mean, if the landlord is here, you know, a meeting over a coffee, literally to discuss, you can then show evidence, this often works well. But be prepared to sort of, perhaps, as Lynette said before, offer less number of checks. You would actually get a better deal, more of a discount. Or if a landlord insists on a certain level and you don't want to move, the other thing to do is to say, okay, well, to try and do a 13-month contract, sort of buy 12 months, get one free. That often is a cheeky way of getting the price down, because obviously the contract's longer.
But, Mario, in terms of that, so you're right. I mean, if you've got an existing landlord, you know it, you know that conversation is coming. So is it advisable for the tenant to break the ice first and contact the landlord in advance to take the upper ground, as it were, or get the ball rolling? Or do you wait for that dreaded email to come in from the landlord?
No, I would say never wait. And, in fact, Brandy's right in that she contacted the landlord in good time. You're supposed to start negotiations or start conversations about renewing a contract 90 days before the actual event. But Lynette is also correct. You start the conversation, but with unprecedented times that we're in, where rents perhaps have softened a lot more sort of on a monthly basis rather than a sort of six-monthly basis, to then revisit it. The idea that the price should be renegotiated is what you do at the sort of 90 days. The physical amount can be finalized later. And this can be done either over the phone or in an email. It doesn't have to be, you know, any other specific way. But that conversation needs to be done before. And definitely I would recommend that it is the tenant that initiates it, because that then gives you a lot of time to go and look for something else in case the landlord absolutely is not going to drop. And it is his right, obviously. At the end of the day, you have to have a mutual understanding amongst all these things. The beauty for the tenant, however, is there's lots of availability.
Right, new scenario then for you. You've done all that as advised by you. You've fallen out massively with your existing landlord. You've told him to stick it where the sun don't shine. You're moving on. There is more to do out there in the market. So you've got to negotiate with a new landlord. How does that approach change?
Right, okay, well, one of the points that I was going to say is if you're able to get a good reference from your existing landlord, you know, to give to your new landlord, that would be a very good move. But of course, if you've fallen out massively with your landlord, you're not going to get a good reference. But getting any sort of reference to show the kind of person you are is good. And by that, I mean, you know, either a bank reference or an employer reference, a bit like when you go to a job. So just to show that you're able to pay the money, that the job is stable, this would help to show that you're a model tenant. And like I said before, perhaps offer to pay in less number of checks. But ultimately, you know, the shoe is very much on the tenant side. Landlords have got a certain amount of leeway, but not as much as they used to have. Because if they play too hard ball, they're not going to get their tenants, and the properties remain empty. So that doesn't help anybody. So just use these pointers here. Do your homework. Check what's on the market, but don't be too aggressive, even on a new existing landlord. Make an offer, ask the agent how long it's been on the market for, because that will give you an indication whether the price is right or not, whether people are really wanting it or not.
See, I take your point there about shoe being on the other foot, and I take the point that, you know, there is plenty of property available out there in the market at the moment. But does that also sort of lull you into a false sense of security, this sort of tenant superiority complex at the moment, where you think, you know, you can play a bit more hardball because you're going to get a better deal elsewhere? Do you run the risk of not getting a better deal elsewhere and possibly being better off where you were?
Well, there is always that. I mean, it's better the devil you know scenario. And a lot of the time, you know, people actually realise a smaller reduction from an existing landlord sometimes is actually better than a larger reduction from a new landlord. Obviously, there are fees to consider, removal costs, etc. But honestly, Tom, I think there is sufficiently enough, you know, inventory out there in the market that I don't think any tenant would be necessarily stuck where they don't need to be. If they don't like where they are for many reasons, and sometimes the landlord is a perfect landlord, but, you know, noisy neighbours, circumstances regarding, I don't know, a restaurant nearby with smells, all these kind of things make your life a bit miserable. So people will move for many different reasons. It isn't just about the landlord-tenant relationships. But, of course, people have two different perceptions when it comes to negotiating, when it comes to the correct pricing. And education is really important, which is why I go online, and I urge this to both tenants and landlords, to see exactly what's available and talk to agents. They've got access to a lot of data.
Mario, bless you, my friend. Good to chat with you. Nice to get through an entire 10 minutes without you talking about Frank's Blue Army as well. So nice to have you on this morning. We will do that very, very soon. Mario Volpi is the sales and leasing manager at Engel and Volkers Dubai. See what I did there? Just cut him off before he could speak football. That's the best way to do it with a Chelsea supporter, as I've found in the past.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.